Hi, I'm Gary from Stonyfield, the organic yogurt company. Ever wonder what the USDA certified organic label on your food stands for? Or what the difference is between organic and all natural? You might be surprised. Visit stonyfield.com to understand what organic means and why it's really worth it. We're proud to be making organic yogurt and honored to support living on Earth, and hope you will too. Donate at loe.org.
Bernie Krause is an acoustic adventurer. For the past 40 years, he's traveled the world searching and recording sounds few people have ever heard before. And some sounds you might never get a chance to hear if it weren't for Bernie Krause. He recorded this in the Amazon rainforest a decade ago. Since then, 60,000 square miles of the jungle have been destroyed. That's an area about the size of Florida. You can read about Bernie Krause's sonic journey in his new book, The Great Animal Orchestra. And you can listen to the man behind the microphone in this story by Living on Earth's Ike Srikantharaja.
Bernie Krause lives in an idyllic part of Northern California. It's all pastures and vineyards. It's a good place to tell a story.
The Valley of the Moon, Jack London country. He lived about a mile from here.
And set some of his adventures in this landscape, along with the South Pacific and, of course, Alaska. Jack London introduced Americans to wilderness most would never see. Bernie Krause does that with sound.
This is where I edit and put things together and also do the archiving. We have a huge library of natural soundscapes.
His garage-sized home studio houses 4,500 hours of natural soundscape recordings. Krause is in his 70s now, but shows no sign of slowing his life's work.
I've always been in sound, because I don't see too well. So my world is informed by the acoustic world around me. And this archive is really important because so much of the material in that archive that was recorded in the early years, 1970s, 1980s, and early 90s, is from habitats that no longer exist.
More than half, he estimates, have fallen silent. These archives hold lost ecosystem swan songs, recorded in beautiful fidelity.
And here's what I use. I'm going over to my little shelves here. But these are the workhorses of most field recordists who are serious, that is.
There are long, skinny microphones, short stethoscopes, windscreens that look like zeppelins. The recorders range from sleek digital gear to their analog ancestors.
It goes from the old Nagra. Here, pick this up.
Okay.
Oh, wow. And that's light. That hasn't got the batteries in it. Yeah, you didn't get a hernia when you lifted it up, did you?
It's unwieldy, but this old Nagra recorder is a trusted friend.
I'm reminded of the time that I was recording with it and dropped it out of a helicopter. I had my feet dangling over the side and the Nagra recorder in my lap, and the chopper lurched, and the Nagra fell off my knees and fell onto the beach 40 feet.
Five stories.
It was still working. It's the only machine that, I mean, it's atomic bomb-proof. Yeah, that's the machine you want to have when that...
When you want to record the apocalypse.
When you want to record the apocalypse.
And Krause might be one of the only guys who would know.
Which, by the way, we worked on that movie.
Apocalypse.
No. Yeah, it did all helicopter sounds with a Moog synthesizer and also about a third of the score.
If you're talking about recorded sound around the late 60s, there's a decent chance Bernie Krause had something to do with it. He was a part of so many seminal moments in history, he's basically the Forrest Gump of sound. Here's the short resume. As a young man, he replaced Pete Seeger as a singer in the Weavers.
Guantanamera, Guajira Guantanamera.
And together we introduced Guantanamera at Carnegie Hall.
He left folk and got into electronic music, partnering with the late recording artist Paul Beaver.
And together we introduced the synthesizer to pop music and film.
Soon, all musicians wanted to tap into the incredible electric sound.
And then we began working with a lot of different artists at the time, Stevie Wonder, Van Morrison, a bunch of others.
The Monkees, The Doors, George Harrison. Krause and Beaver also created sounds for 135 feature films, Rosemary's Baby, Invasion of the Body Snatchers, the original Dr. Dolittle.
But, you know, I don't remember much about that stuff. I just don't recall.
Krause doesn't talk much about his time in Hollywood, but he does remember what he left for. It was a challenge, an album on ecology, to combine electronic sounds alongside natural ones.
I hadn't really given much thought to that idea, like what was outside, because I'd never been outside. I was terrified of the natural world.
Really? Since you were a kid? You weren't an outdoorsy, camping sort of guy?
Not really. I mean, a goldfish scared the hell out of me.
So the city kid from Detroit turned studio artist headed outside.
I gathered up a small recorder, tape recorder, went into the field and recorded in Muir Woods around San Francisco. No question about it. The first time I turned on the recorder and had earphones on outside, everything changed. For a kid who suffered from ADHD, if I wanted to get a good recording, I had to sit for a long period of time quietly, alone, and not moving. This made me feel so good, you know, just to sit there quietly and watch events unfold, that that's what I wanted to do.
This is from the album In a Wild Sanctuary. It draws from those first recordings of a stream in Muir Woods.
I didn't want to be inside anymore with those smoky rooms and all the musicians telling bad jokes and the drugs and the rest of the stuff that was going on. It was really boring to me.
The wilderness was interesting. He studied it and earned a PhD in the creative arts with a focus on bioacoustics, then left to find places of sonic serenity.
Well, the next step was to get away from airplane sounds and traffic noise and a lot of people yapping and talking, which is the only way that you can do it.
But escaping the human soundscape is not easy.
As you know, it's not a group process.
Hello.
Oh, yeah.
As we're talking, a plane flies over and confirms it's hard to find quiet.
Pull up.
Even though Krause's California home is tucked into a shady hill with no humans in sight, there are airports, a highway, and a racetrack nearby. The seclusion here is an optical illusion, something that's harder to fake in sound.
Because it tells the truth. Your ears tell the truth.
The truth in soundscapes is his core belief, and Bernie Krause has field-tested it.
I recorded, not very far from here, a place called Lincoln Meadow in the Sierras. There was a lumber group that wanted to cut down some of the forest, and they were introducing the then new idea of selective logging.
Basically cutting every other tree.
And I said to them, fine. I said, any chance I can go out and record before you do the selective logging at this site and see what the density and diversity of bird life is in the spring? And they said, yeah, sure, come on by. And I did.
But a year later, the loggers fell short of their word.
If you take a look at a Google Earth image of that site, what they've done is they kept the tree density along the edge of Lincoln Meadow the same. But if you walk back a couple hundred yards, they clear-cut it.
In 1 year, the ambience of the meadow went from this to this. Google used these and other of Krause's recordings as a feature in Google Earth. Universities got interested, too. The idea of using soundscapes to show change in an environment has been gaining momentum for years, but the discipline is still pretty small.
It's called soundscape ecology, and the ones who have actually picked up on the scientific end of the thing are Michigan State University, the Envirosonics lab there, and also at Purdue University, Brian Pijanowski.
Last year, Bernie Krause and Professor Pijanowski co-wrote a paper describing the field in the journal Bioscience. And the Purdue professor recently launched a website called the Soundscape Network.
We collect huge amounts of files. We have over 500,000 sound recordings, many of them about 10 to 15 minutes long.
Besides making the audio publicly available, Pijanowski mines these recordings as data sets that gauge the health of ecosystems. The answer is relevant to biologists, engineers, urban planners, and policymakers. And all of them have something to learn from Bernie Krause.
I mean, he's thought about what can produce sound, and he's run around and done it. I haven't gotten out and done all the different things that he has, but he's teaching me.
The guy that recorded Apocalypse Now has a lot of technical knowledge to share, but the intuitive skill of listening is harder to teach. Brian Pijanowski is learning to listen to the whole ecosystem as a biophony.
As ecologists begin to study this phenomenon, we want to be able to borrow the vocabulary of musicians, but also learn from them the way in which they listen. They're great listeners.
Here's Bernie Krause again.
We're a visual culture, so we don't know how to listen. We know how to listen to, sort of to music.
We listen to music, but we've forgotten to listen to nature. Krause's new book is The Great Animal Orchestra. It argues that art imitates wildlife.
Humans are imitators. That's what we do for a living. We imitate. And when we saw primates pounding out rhythms on the buttresses of fig trees in the forest, we developed a drum. The different length broken reeds by a stream. We got the flute.
Krause finds the origins of music in the world's wild places.
We didn't learn it from Juilliard. Didn't learn it from Eastman School of Music or Berkeley in Boston. We learned it from the critters.
He hears the biophony everywhere, in places we never knew existed. He's recorded underwater the sounds of an anemone trying to eat his hydrophone and spitting it back out. Into anthills where insects chirp as they rub their legs together. And inside trees, where thirsty plant cells produce incredible, imperceptible pops.
We cheated a little on this one. We drilled a tiny hole about the size of a pencil eraser into this cottonwood tree and then inserted a hydrophone, because the sound is very high frequency, and recorded the sound and then slowed it up by a factor of 7 when we got into the studio so we could actually hear it. And I just happened to hit on a stretch that was perfectly in sync rhythmically. The beat is perfect.
Yeah,
yeah. People always say that they use this old trope that a picture is worth 1,000 words. I always say, well, yeah, okay, a soundscape is worth 1,000 pictures.
These soundscapes tell stories of invisible, unreachable places, and ones that have gone silent. There's one more story, one in particular that would have made Krause's neighbor Jack London proud. It was captured in Ontario's Algonquin Park.
Yeah, I went out one morning, and all of a sudden, I was surrounded by these wolves. The guy that was with me was terrified. I was in heaven. You know, I wrapped a string around a tree and set up two mics on it. And began to record. And I had a pack of wolves in front of me and a pack of wolves in back of me, and was completely surrounded with these two groups just yowling at one another in the dawn light. And it was absolutely glorious.
The boy who flinched at goldfish grew up to chase the call of the wild. Packs of wolves in stereo don't even really bother him.
That's because I'm crazy.
There's another reason.
The sounds of the natural world are the sounds of the divine. The sounds of the human world are anything but.
For Bernie Krause, listening lets him step out of our everyday landscape and into the gospel of nature. For Living on Earth, I'm Ike Sreeskandarajah.
A soundscape may be worth 1,000 pictures, but for some photos and more about Bernie Krause and his new book, The Great Animal Orchestra, turn to our webpage, loe.org.